Did you consider playing Matt Murray at all tomorrow?
No.
And Sheldon, there's such a burden on John, Willie, Austin, and Mitch. What's the message to them heading into that one game?
I'm sorry. I missed the beginning part of your question. I was thinking about it.
Sheldon. The idea of starting Matt Murray, who makes $5 million and is a two-time Stanley Cup champion. Not a good idea in the mind of Sheldon Keefe. A quick amendment to the previous story about Tommy Cool. He shot the 62 at Illini Country Club.
Texter's not happy with you. That's the Illini. That's the me version of the Texter. Be like, know your golf better, Justin.
I was gonna say. I mean, if the guy shot a 62 at LA Country Club,
Max Homa would have a word because he's the course record.
He should know though. I mean, he knows this course he's playing at.
He knows.
Anyway, not cool. Still. Let's get back in the Leafs discussion with our next guest, Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet NHL draft analyst. We'll talk about Leafs. We'll talk about Bedard. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
So where do you want to start here? We'll choose your own adventure, Sam.
Yeah, well, the Leafs could be a long conversation. Bedard will be a short one, that's for sure.
Okay, let's go long here and we see if time for Connor Bedard. What stuck out the most to you while watching the Leafs, you know, give back what they gained? Give back what they gained in a 6-game series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, in 3 games here against the Florida Panthers. Like, what is top of mind? What is burning for you?
So it's kind of the same issue for 3 teams, and that's the power play. And if the power play's going, these teams win, and if it's not, it doesn't. So look at Dallas last night, 2-for-3 in the power play. They win pretty handily. They chase Grubauer as the only guy not to have been replaced in the second round so far. So that was something that was quite interesting to me. You look at the Edmonton Oilers, they get basically 1.5 power plays. I mean, I think it was 2 minutes and 40 seconds of power play time the other night. One of them was in garbage time when the game was out of reach. They don't score in the power play, they lose. And I look at Toronto, wasn't even granted a power play. What was it, 2 games ago or last game? And as a result of that, they don't win. So that's the first thing that sticks out to me, the reliance on the power play for some of these deep and talented teams. So then it comes back to me, all right, what's going to happen? We talked with the Oilers all year long about, okay, the McLeods, the Ryans, the Yamamotos, these guys have had success providing secondary scoring to support for years what's been, you know, the main issue there, just Draisaitl and McDavid getting it done. And then you look at Dallas, and it's the same sort of thing that goes on there. You know, we're transitioning from the Ben and Sagan phase into the Robertson-Hintz phase. And that sort of thing exists with the power play. So for Toronto, you know, you talk about Matthews, Marner, Nylander, the core four, Tavares not being able to get a goal in the series. Well, that's in large part because they've been limited on the power play. And that's not to say that they don't get it done 5-on-5 like they did in the regular season. It's just more difficult to do it here in the playoffs, and that's something they're going to have to fight through tonight if they want to extend their lives.
Yeah, it'll certainly be a big part of it. You know, NHL officiating, we know it's always a topic, a conversation. I'd be shocked if they went 2 games without getting a power play there. So we'll see how that bodes for them tonight. You know, Sam, obviously you do a lot of work with prospects, and I'm going to keep this as an NHL conversation, but a lot of the conversations we've had about the Leafs was not the play style or the talent level, but the personality. Is there some personality flaw with this group? You know, there is a lot of robotic nature. You hear the comments that come out of them of, well, take it one day at a time, process oriented. Doesn't seem like anybody's getting mad. Is that kind of one of the hardest things of scouting and prospects and understanding? Is, yeah, everybody can watch tape and understand, you know, what a guy has an ability to do on the ice. But is that kind of the hardest thing, the black box, if you will, of being a scout? The idea of finding out not what a player's capable of, but what kind of person they are. And not to say, you know, good person, bad person, but personality traits, how driven they are, those types of things.
Well, if I look at the group that's on the ice right now, then, you know, I don't see that being a major issue or character flaw when I go back to the draft years of those players. I mean, Matthews, how could you not love him? Marner, watched him throughout his career in London. Same thing with Tavares and Oshawa in London. So I don't find that to be an issue with the current group. Moving forward, if I look at Matthew Nyes and the small sample in which he's played, he looks to me like a guy who's going to you know, who's going to go out and play hard from a personality perspective. He's someone I never got to meet in the draft process, but based on what the eye's telling me, I don't see that to be an issue there. So the separate part of the conversation is moving forward and the due diligence done on prospects by any team. And, you know, I think Toronto's a team that quite obviously has, an endless amount of resources outside of the salary cap to dig in on these types of things. So I don't think systematically from Kyle Dubas on down through their scouting staff that's an issue, because there's all sorts of resources they have available to them, be it multiple interviews, you know, taking players out for dinner, any kind of test that they may run on players, especially when you get to the combine. I don't find that to be an issue with the group. Now, I can't speak to the players that are coming up, but again, same thing with Joe Wall, drafted in 2016. Some of the comments I read about him yesterday in preparing for tonight's game, you know, character doesn't seem to really be an issue for me there. So what I would say is this, though, moving forward, as some of Kyle Dubas's prospects end up playing for Toronto, you know, if that's something that rears its head, for me, there would be no excuse for that to happen. But we're talking about hypotheticals here. So I think it's a situation where every team really has spent a lot more time and resources, especially in recent years, the last 5 to 10, in doing that type of work. What type of kid is he? Talk to the billet, talk to the parent, the teacher, teammates, trainers, equipment managers, all of those things come into play. And I know that's an important part of the process for every team, and I suspect that that's not any different for Toronto.
Well, it feels like there is a pretty sizable draft and development issue here for the Maple Leafs. I mean, if you look at the list of guys who have been drafted and developed who are going to be supporting the core four, and I guess Morgan Rielly as well, core four adjacent, it's Timothy Liljegren tonight and Joe Wall end list. And Joe Wall is an emergency goaltender, really. He's not the preferred option. And Timothy Liljegren may or may not play more than 10 minutes. And again, this is symptomatic of a team going for it, making mistakes, having to erase mistakes. But the Matthew Nyes thing was so special and so new and so fun because it's such a rare occurrence for the Leafs to actually have someone, since Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner got here, come in and make a statement and actually help this core achieve something. And he did in the first round, being on the ice for 3 overtime winners for the Maple Leafs. Like, how glaring is the draft and development issue for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, the way I look at it is when you have a system or program that's been put in place where so much of your resources are devoted to the quote core four, you have to find a way to surround those guys. So what do? Is it your draft and development? Are you bringing up players because they're cost effective, maybe earlier than they should be? So that's one element to consider. The next element is, are you drafting players that are good enough to be up there to support that group? And I guess the third element, and probably the more important element, is, and this is how it's been done here in the last few years, is we're going to support that group with older, more experienced veteran players, the Camps, the Caches, the Yarncroaks, the Acheris, those types of players. And so for me, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But what happens now, I guess, is what you need to look at. Who are the guys coming? Who are the Topi Niemelas? Who are the next Matthew Nyes? Who are the guys coming that are going to supplement the group moving forward? Or do you continue with the core four and continue to find Giordano at $1 million, Spezza at $1 million, those type of players? So I guess we could answer the question by saying, to this point, that hasn't worked beyond a first-round victory for Toronto. And, you know, is that acceptable? Is that okay? The fan base surely thinks not. I would say that we're going to have a pretty good answer in the next couple of weeks here as to whether upper management thinks that's okay or not. But to this point, the proof is in the pudding. That program hasn't worked. And again, if you're okay with getting in the playoffs, if that's your measure of success is getting into the playoffs and winning one round in 20 years, then I guess it's okay. But I would say for the fan base and probably for upper management, I think we're going to understand if Toronto especially bows out here in the second round, that's probably not okay.
Sam Cosentino, rather, with us here. So some sectors of the fan base celebrated Kyle Dubas for getting out from underneath the Peter Mrazek contract, moving down a couple spots, still getting Fraser Minton. A lot of excitement over that because, hey, they got their guy anyway. But if they have to do that again this year to bury Matt Murray, what would be your reaction to that?
Well, I don't think there's anyone in hockey who, when that move was made, that the risk, you knew the risk was there. And it's interesting because the way I looked at the goaltending situation was, if you can get Samsonov and Murray, and you can get Samsonov to feel good about his game for half the games, and Murray to feel good about his health for half the games, then you should be able to mix and match these two and be able to play a full season. So that obviously hasn't happened. And, you know, really, if you look down the NHL, the two-goalie system, it doesn't really work anymore. I think there's, you know, how many teams have – two teams for sure in the playoff have already used three goalies. So now you have to – what's your insurance? If you're happy with Joe Wall being the insurance, he's the guy of the future, drafted in 2016. His time is right about now. He should be ready to rock and roll. And I think he's going to be the guy of the future. Then – I guess that works out fine. But I think for a team with all the resources and being able to max out the payroll to go into an elimination game and probably a couple of elimination games if they get past tonight with Joe Wall, that probably is not acceptable. So, again, when I look at the Murray thing, it came with a ton of risk. I think Kyle Dubas obviously felt that he knew the person with his relationship going back to his days in junior and thought that with the resources available to them, that from a health perspective, they'd be able to keep him healthy for, let's say, 50 games, 40 in the regular season and another 10 or so in the playoffs. And obviously that hasn't happened. So again, that's something that they're going to have to move off of and move on from, because that's not a risk that I don't think they can assume moving forward. And you have to think that Samsonov, after the year he's had, is probably due for a big raise.
Yeah, the RFA status will help them a little bit there, but yeah, definitely going up from what the Leafs were able to get him to sign for last summer. Matthew Nye is a guy you mentioned. We've talked about him for two straight years, and boy, it was nice to see him live up to the hype that we had all heaped on him. Did what you saw of him change your opinion at all, or just kind of confirm exactly what you thought in terms of the player? Because I know just from my own perspective, there was a little bit of I was waiting to be disappointed with how excited we all were about him, and with the big body and the presence, and you know, you see all the situations the Leafs were using him in, the confidence they had in him, and his ability to, you know, just look comfortable in those games. Did it change your opinion of him at all, or just kind of confirm things for you?
No, it confirmed things for me. I think I've been on record as saying that this guy was a bit of a unicorn in the Leafs system for his size and his ability to play with some heaviness, yet play with a skill level that would definitely work by being able to play all over the lineup, including playing in the top six. So it confirmed what I said. And, you know, you try and corroborate the work you do on these things. And David Quinn's the head coach of San Jose. He coached Matthew at the Olympics and said, oh, man, this guy, I'm not worried about him at all. He's ready for the NHL. So when you kind of take what you've known and what you've seen, and then you corroborate it with, one of 32 guys in the National Hockey League who's had the experience to be able to work with him through the Olympics, that to me was good enough. And so, you know, looking for big things out of Matthew Nye moving forward. And, you know, it's going to be huge for Toronto because, again, from a cap perspective, they're going to be able to have at least a couple of years where you can control that salary.
All right, let's get to the short stuff. NHL draft lottery goes the Chicago Blackhawks way. So fill in the blank for me. Connor Bedard, or Chicago, is the blank spot for Connor Bedard.
Is the best season ticket seller in the league. I would not, I hate to say this, but Columbus probably would have needed him the most, because that's the team that's been mired in mediocrity basically since day one. You know, Philadelphia, it seems like things are still a bit of a mess over there. Vancouver, although they had such a slight chance, for me, that would have been the top landing spot. But being Canadian, I guess the next spot where it would have made some sense and there was some probability was Montreal. And then would that have been fair that they get the number one pick, you know, 2 years in a row? So From a pure league perspective, I think Chicago is probably the best place he could have landed.
Yeah,
because that's a key market for the league, and you know, we've seen what's happened there the last few years.
Yeah, Sam, we might have to call you back quickly, although we're kind of at the end of it here. Well, hopefully we can reconnect quickly, because I do want to ask about Fantilli and what Columbus might do there. But yeah, Sam turned into a robot on us there for a second. Yeah, I agree. Kind of like, there are other options. There are ones that may be better for this network, better for the Canadian hockey fan. But in terms of landing in a spot where we're going to see a lot of Connor Bedard, he can change the fortunes of a franchise that is very, very important to the league. We're definitely with you there, Sam. Let's get to the number two pick. Anaheim sliding down to number two. Bobby Ryan and now Adam Fantilli. Is Fantilli to Anaheim a lock based on your projections and how you size up these prospects heading into the draft?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Pat Verbeek is a little bit of an unknown for me in terms of what he's looking for and looking to do here. But I think when I'm looking at Adam Fantilli, he'd be a hard guy for me to pass up on number two. And the way I look at it is Chicago sort of replaced Patrick Kane with Connor Bedard, and I think now Anaheim can replace Ryan Getzlaf with Adam Fantilli. You're talking about a big center who maybe is not quite as aggressive physically as what Getzlaf was, but in terms of point production, leadership capabilities, and the ability to lead a club, I think Fantilli can be that guy. It's going to be lots of fun for me to watch him play at the World, so just to see how he fits in and maybe get a better gauge as to whether or not he'd be ready to play as early as next year in the NHL or maybe one more year at Michigan.
Yeah, it'll be. It's always fun to see those guys at the Worlds. You know, it's nice to watch that tournament, regardless, with NHL players. But the guys bursting onto the scene, always fun there. One other one about the draft before we let you go, Michkov. Obviously, you know, as far back as a couple of years ago, it was looked at as a. You know, I think this was probably a fake horse race, but oh, could he be in the mix with Bedard there? Obviously, Fantilli seems to have kind of surpassed him. We know he's had some family issues as well. What's going on with him heading into the draft? Where could you kind of see him potentially sliding to?
Two places. The first would be Arizona, because they pick again at 12 and they're still going to be a really good player there. Plus it fits Arizona's timeline if and when they ever get into a new building. The other place would be Washington, and I think the obvious reasons exist there. When you have Alexander Ovechkin, you've had a lot of success with Russian players. I think the possibility presents itself for him to be picked there. Other than that, honestly, it's a real crapshoot. So those would be two targets I'd be looking at here in the top 10. From a pure hockey player perspective, he deserves to be in the top three conversation, but there are so many other factors that are going to play a part here that either a multi-team, a multi-pick team, or a team that's had success with Russian players in the past would be the targets for me.
Arizona scheduled to pick sixth, and the Washington Capitals slide in at number eight. Not used to seeing Washington up there in the top 10, but
a Russian player at number eight. It's perfect. Perfect.
Sometimes things just work out. Sam, it worked out for us this morning because we were able to chat with you. We appreciate you coming on, and we will certainly chat again soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Take care.
That's Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet's NHL draft analyst.
We should clip that part about him maybe going back to Michigan. Just send it to Morosi. Get him all hot and bothered this morning. He was very adamant that he wanted to see that yesterday when we talked to him.
Yeah, he's going to the Worlds. Connor Bedard, not.
That's fine. Personally for me, especially because I won't have Leafs games to watch after tonight when they inevitably bow out. but personally for me, I would like to watch Connor Bedard at the World Championships.
Of course.
Of course. But why? Like, what?
Why not? I think I'm a why not guy. Why not?
Well, I mean, I suppose the counter argument to what I'm about to say, I'll pre-argue against myself, is that what type of injury would he have to suffer to not go first overall? Would he have to die? Like, would he have to break both his legs? Honestly, like, what would have to happen over there?
A sizable one, right? A sizable one.
But that's the issue. You're going into what is supposed to be the start of a transcendent NHL career. You want to be focused on that. I get it. I totally understand the pushback of why not, but I do completely understand it. We see this all the time in many different sports. I'm not going to kill him for it. I would, of course, like to see him there. The guy who I did kill for not going to, wasn't the Worlds, but it was the Olympics, was Cale Makar, because this was when the NHL players weren't there, and he was still at, was it UMass that he went, where he went to school? And he basically had said, I didn't want to miss the World Juniors and then go leave my team for the Olympics. The whole point of being in school was to be with this team. And at the time I said, how many chances is this guy going to have to play for Team Canada in the Olympics? But that actually proved maybe to be zero. Correct, because it's not because of his play. It's because the NHL and the Olympics can never get along.
Right. Fantilli, interesting, though, because, I mean, we were talking about, can Fantilli catch Bedard pre-World Junior? And we're like, oh, no. There's one player who is so far ahead of the other, and I don't think there's going to be, I don't think the same thing will apply. In fact, I think there'll be less expectation, therefore more upside for Fantilli.
Totally.
But he's in the driver's seat for number two, and I guess if he doesn't play well at the Worlds, it could only hurt him. So I do appreciate guys just going to play. Want to play hockey. You do this for a reason, to play hockey, not to protect draft stock that's already in concrete.
And quickly, you want to talk about risking it. If he falls from number two to number three, he is trading in a life in Orange County for one in Columbus. You want to talk about stakes. Cause just compared him to Ryan Getzlaff. You go ask, and as a guy who had Ryan Getzlaff in studio on trade deadline day, let me tell you, guy loves his life in Orange County. I don't think he'd be as happy if he was a Jacket all those years ago. I don't think so. So you want to talk about really putting it on the line for your country. You are potentially forcing yourself to live in Columbus for the first 8 years of your professional life.
You don't get a permatan living in Columbus. No. That
but
is for sure.
If he falls all the way to four, then he's a Shark. So I don't know. Maybe he's playing the long game here. I don't know.
There's just one landmine there. Let's get to something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Okay. That's, yeah.
Don't talk about it.
We'll deal with that.
They're going to. They'll get us if this, we mention it.
This from Larry Brooks, Brooksy. So,
guess that's what I'm saying.
This isn't like, you know, concrete reporting here. So I will just quote him. He tweeted this yesterday. So I will pass along this scenario that was just presented to me. Dubas leaves Toronto to become Pittsburgh GM. We've heard that. Brings Keefe with him. As such, fires Mike Sullivan, who in turn becomes a free agent and permissible to become the New York Rangers head coach. So a lot there. I mean, he's getting to his New York Rangers point.
Yep.
Mike Sullivan potentially going there. Two things here.
Former Rangers assistant with Torts.
There you go. Two things here. Sheldon Keefe, or Kyle Dubas rather, would be crazy to bring Sheldon Keefe with him anywhere he goes, right?
Well, to me, I'm just going to explain how I think Kyle Dubas would think about that. I'm not disagreeing with your premise.
Okay.
But to me, there would be no further proof that in his heart of hearts, in Kyle Dubas's belief that the problem was the personalities of the core.
That would say a lot.
Bringing Sheldon Keefe.
It would be
clear as day that Toe Blake in his prime could not get through to these guys. So I'm not going to put this on Sheldon. That is what, now, if I am Kyle Dubas and I am starting a new regime, I probably do not bring Sheldon with me. That is not, and again, I want to be so clear about this. The Leafs are not in the position they're in because of Sheldon Keefe. I do not think that remotely, but not the move I would make, but that would be a 1,000% kiss of death for what Dubas thought about this core.
Immediately, the new GM for the Maple Leafs would have to make a trade, would have to find a dance partner and get one of these core four players out, because that would be the indictment of all indictments.
Yeah.
The number two, though, didn't Mike Sullivan, isn't he, like, since Fenway Sports Group took over in Pittsburgh, hasn't he been like the guy making decisions, the guy advising, consulting, doing basically everything
right away
for the franchise?
If I'm trying to remember, because I read this a while ago. Somebody had a great rundown of a lot of NHL coaches getting extended, not with a year left on their deal, but with two, with three. Sullivan was one of those guys. So clearly somebody who's really important to whatever Fenway Sports Group thinks is going on there as well. The other part of that, and, you know, I'm not taking away what Fenway thinks about him, but this is a kind of Brian Burke thing. Like, he takes care of his guys, so there's a little bit of a part of that as well. But yeah, they clearly are very invested in what he's doing.
And yet, I think Sullivan was like, yeah, we need a change up.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
So maybe it wasn't
Burke
who gave
him the deal. Yeah. I mean, this guy, it's Lemieux, and then it's Sullivan in that organization. At least it
feels like. Well, there's a Canadian guy from the Maritimes who slides somewhere in between there, but
Is it Sid Lemieux, Sully? Or is it Lemieux, Sid, Sully?
It's still Mario up top.
And Malkin 4?
Well, Malkin.
Nah, they kind of.
Malkin thinks he's one. He'll tell you 3 years Russian Super League.
Didn't Sid have to convince them to keep Letang and Malkin around?
Yes.
Anyway, that's.
And guess what? He got his way, which kind of proves exactly where he is in the pecking order.
Exactly. So we shall see what happens there. We'll wait until game four of the Eastern Conference semifinal is played. After the break, we've got Michael Layton, who's in goal. One of the four times in NHL history, a team has come back for 3-0. Did that with the Philadelphia Flyers back in 2010. He's now the goaltending coach for the Windsor Spitfires. So we'll touch on...
My Windsor Spitfires. One of several OHL teams I claim because I spent some time in Windsor. So my Windsor Spitfires.
What are the other ones? Just quickly.
Kitchener Rangers, because I did some updates in Kitchener. Know the broadcast crew there. Those are the main two. And then I'm out Burlington way, so I got to be a Hamilton Bulldogs guy, I think. But I'll be honest, that's like pretty tepid at this point.
Arbor Jack guy. Shout out. We will talk to him about the goaltenders involved in this series, but also what it takes to come back from 3-0, because we haven't really left the door open, and we're gonna at least explore that after the break.
Yum, 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 yum.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, good reminder here in the text line. Brent, Justin, one game at a time. Too early for eulogies. Fly the ragged car flag proudly. That's Rick in Niagara. Yeah, I mean, we have been doing the eulogy.
I got a shout out. Rick is my guy. Rick has kept me afloat when I've been filling in for you and Ailish at various times. I won't give everyone the details, but he sent in a great fake grinder story when I was shouting out all my grinders. So love Rick in Niagara.
In brackets, fake grinder.
Yeah, he knows.
It has been doom and gloom, death march, eulogy. It has been that. So let's look at it a different way before we get to Michael Layton here. What can be accomplished tonight in your mind, Gunner? Like, we've talked about consequences of losing. What does a win get you tonight if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs?
It gets you a chance at redemption. That's the first thing. I want to be clear. I will not live in this fantasy world where this is going to happen and Michael Layton's going to come on in about 10 minutes time and tell us it's totally possible. And that's great because he lived it. So he can tell me it's going to happen. I'm not getting myself there until we're at least in game six. So in theory, you give yourself another day. I think the biggest thing that can be accomplished for this team is an individual thing, which is a problem because all we've said the whole time is talking about how all these guys care about is individual things. And it's all about the guy between the pipes for me. Joe Wall comes in and looks good. It does not matter whether he wins this game or not. It really, truly does not. But if he comes in and looks the part, continues to look exactly like he's looked, it gives you confidence that he can at the very least be a 1B. Now, I don't think one game undoes what he's built up this year, but he can really stamp it home with the first. Because again, coming in a game you're not expected to in the playoffs is very different from sitting there for 3 days knowing you're going to start it. It is a completely different animal. So I think that is probably, at first blush, the biggest thing that can be gained for this team is Joe Wall kind of stamping home everything that we've seen from him this year.
Okay, I'll go with this. You save face a little bit if you win this game. A little bit. You avoid embarrassment. You avoid humiliation, at least for the time being. And that beyond that, I think that's the only way.
I actually think it goes the other way. I think it doesn't do anything for them in the moment, but in September when we talk about this or when we're doing the eulogy of this Leafs era, we don't say they got swept. We say they lost in five.
Okay, so you kick the embarrassment at least down the road, right?
Yep.
That's all you can accomplish tonight is avoid, like, and that's really, I think if you're the Maple Leafs, that's all you can really focus on. Let's not get embarrassed here. Let's have some dignity. Let's have a decent effort. Let's band together rather than have the cracks continue to form between us. Let's actually put up a fight. It's about trying to save face, maybe even just individually. Like, if we're talking about consequences for the team and the organization, I guess, for what the fan base is going to be geared into. But William Nylander could be potentially playing for his role here in Toronto, for the opportunity to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. That could be the reality tonight for William Nylander. If things get so dire, maybe Mitch Marner's in the same boat. And we know Austin Matthews is control of everything. But for a lot of the players on this team, it's about, hey, do you still want to be with this organization? Because if you know show tonight, if you willingly accept the humiliation, then there's a good chance you won't be here because things are going to be so different in the front office. And how could you not start your work with game four when really there's nothing to play for, but there's everything to play for, right? Like, you could no show and then you tell the organization, the fan base, exactly who you are as a person and as a professional hockey player. So I think individually and at the team level, you can avoid some humiliation or at least put it off until Friday night, Saturday, whatever.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. The other thing I'll point to is it's something that kind of jumped out to us when we were looking at the lines and the pairs this morning is, and again, it's one game. They could look like the greatest D pair of all time, and it doesn't mean anything. It means they had one good game together. But if McCabe and Liljegren looks like a thing, if that's something that you can have some confidence in, that you can look at, again, this is, and again, Leighton's going to come on in a couple minutes and he's going to tell us it's all possible, and these guys need to believe that. But looking ahead to next year, if you can look at two guys that you have under contract and say, at the very least...
You can't get past the eulogy, eh?
We're next year. That is what it is. That's what you take out of tonight. That is the positive, is McCabe and Liljegren looking good together. Because, hey, okay, I'll live in your fantasy land where they're going to come back and win this series. You need a D pair to start performing well together.
Okay.
So that's as good a one to start. If another positive is, Morgan Riley needs a return to what he's been in this playoffs. He has been far from the reason that this series has gone the way it's been, but he's taken a half step back in this series, much like everyone else has from what you got against Tampa. You would like to see him kind of, again, whether it's extend this thing for a couple more games, whether it's avoid going out with a whimper, you'd like to see Morgan Riley kind of have one last hurrah in this, because he has been, for everybody who has been eating it left, right, and center, rightfully so, Morgan Riley has been the one guy to avoid strays, rightfully so.
Okay, I'm going to keep the door open.
Okay, that's fine.
So game four, you can avoid humiliation. If you win game four, though, you also set up a game where you can transfer the pressure.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
Okay, so if winning game four is about saving face, game five would be about trying to transfer the pressure. Because I was on Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis yesterday. We had Justin Williams on. And when they knew in 2014, when they came back, when they knew it was possible, was after game five, when they had felt that the other team, the San Jose Sharks in that case, who a lot of parallels between the Sharks and the Leafs, they felt that it was in their heads at that point, because they had lost two games in a row, that they weren't sure that they had buried this team yet. They felt a change in the opponent at that point. And right now, Florida, for at least two more games, can be on the high horse, can just be dominant, can just be, can say anything, can do anything, can really do no wrong. They have a free roll at the table tonight. They have a free roll really in game five. But after game five, that's when you have to at least concern yourself with the possibility of blowing a series in epic proportion. So I think there are little things and little checkpoints along the way here if you're willing to entertain the possibility of a comeback, which is, can we save face in game four? Can we transfer the pressure in game five? And then who knows where you go from there?
You know how I know that's true? Because this is not the exact scenario, because Tampa had won a game in that series, but that's what the Leafs had staring down the barrel of them being up 3-1, and you don't want to put yourself in the position where all of a sudden
it's a
game seven at home. Montreal, the exact same thing. So the Leafs know this well. If you can do it to the other team, and the other part of this as well is we've seen, if I'm going to, again, look for positives tonight, we've seen with this Leafs team, this is kind of when they're at their absolute best. Everyone has been crapping on them for 3 days and really longer than
that. And you expect that.
And you do.
You do expect that. You, personally, yes, Gunnar, yes. Expect them.
Tonight, I think 6-0 win for the Leafs is on the table. When the night is always darkest before the dawn or whatever the scenario is, it has been awful. And when this team gets in a rut like this, they do not slowly come out of it with a 1-0 win. Generally speaking, they get shot out of a cannon and go on a big run. So if it happens, it happens with a big, big win tonight.
So if they explode like you believe they can.
I do.
We could be talking about a game five.
We could.
At home Friday night, where there is something real there. That you could actually plant the seed of doubt in a game five if you can get there. And if you don't, step on the rake before you have that opportunity. Right?
Yep. Very much possible.
Did I make you feel any better? Open the possibility.
Hope is a dangerous thing. So you gave me it, but eventually it's just going to, I'm going to be screaming at you tomorrow that you made me have this conversation today.
that's fair. I will wear that tomorrow. But it is possible. And our next guest is proof of that. We've got Michael Leighton on the line, former NHL goaltender, Windsor Spitfires goaltending coach, but also was in net for the second last time out of four that a team has come back from a 3-0 deficit. And guess what? They were down 3-0 in game seven. 2. Good morning, Michael. How are we doing this
morning? How you doing, guys?
We're pretty good. We're pretty good. We're trying, you know, we've had 3 days to set up game 4 and the death march that we've been calling it here with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we've kind of gone through, this is the first time we've actually, like, entertained coming back. And yeah. I think it was a perfect lead-in because you have come back before. So I'll ask you the question that we were just asking ourselves. When you're down 3-0 and you have a game 4 in front of you, what does a win in game 4 get you? Because it doesn't get you back in the series yet, but it gets you at least a step in the right direction. So a win in game 4 when down 3-0 accomplishes what exactly?
I think it just gives you confidence and hope, right? I think this game is all about momentum and just getting a win. Like, closing out a series is actually the hardest thing to do. Because once you get to that 3-0, you're expected to win, right? So you're coming in, you're down 3-0, just to have that, like, pressure off you, like, you're supposed to lose. So when you come in that game and you have nothing to lose and you win, you know, game 4, you go into game 5 thinking, okay, you know, if we win this one, we're in the series. So then the game, you know, it all changes just a little bit, but it definitely just gives you confidence and, you know, a little hope that it is possible.
Yeah, it certainly does that. You know, how important are the personalities in the room? That's been a big conversation talking point about just what the kind of mental, personal makeup of this Leafs team is. When you think back of your Flyers team that was able to do it, I mean, a lot of big personalities involved in that. Was there somebody kind of galvanizing the group? Was it every guy just believing in and of themselves? How important is the actual personality makeup of the group to get it done?
Yeah, like, you got to be realistic. You know, when you're down 3-0, everyone's pretty upset and kind of depressed a little bit. So, and down on themselves. But you know, us as a group, we were confident in our team. We didn't think that we played bad. You know, I've watched the Maple Leafs play the last 3 games, and they're not playing bad hockey. So, just to get that confidence as a group to know that you can win the next game. And that's kind of what we did, you know, with the Flyers. Laviolette came in our room and said, obviously, you guys are disappointed, but can we beat this team 1 game? And we all agreed that we knew we could beat them in that next game. So we went out, we won that game, and we sat down the next game. And Laviolette said, okay, I don't care about the last 4 games now. You guys are down 3-1 in the series. Can we win this next game? And we all were like, yeah, we're confident as a group. We know we're better than that team, and we can beat them. And we won that game. Then you go to the next game. So it's step by step. You got to forget what just happened and just be confident as players and as your group that you can win, you know, just the next game to get you to that game 7.
So you guys obviously compartmentalized it the way you needed to, taking it 1 game at a time. But you can't really, you can't erase the thoughts in your head, right? So early on, you know, you're down 3-0. I feel like it would be about survival, right? Can we just get through this 1 game? And if that's the case, if it's about survival early on, how does it evolve? When does it go from survival to sport, where you are the hunted earlier and you become the hunters? When did you feel the transfer of pressure, or did you feel a transfer of pressure in that series? When did the dynamic really change and shift where, you know, the confidence was not just about winning 1 game, but definitely winning the series?
I think when we won and the series became 3-2, because then it was like, oh, okay. You know, they knew we were coming to play every night. They knew the momentum kind of changed a little bit. So, again, the pressure was on them. For them to win, they're supposed to win. If you look at all the odds and the statistics, they were supposed to win. And we knew that we were kind of the underdog, just trying to win 2 more games. And the momentum changed, and it was in our favor, and we just kept rolling. And again, it's confidence and believing in yourself that you can actually do it. That's the biggest part to it for me.
You mentioned Laviolette there, and, you know, sometimes coaches get too much credit, sometimes they get too much blame, you know, much like players. The answer is somewhere in the middle there. But how important was he in all of that? You know, you mentioned the idea of him just saying it's not about winning 4 games tonight, just winning 1 game at a time. There has been a lot of conversation in this market about the idea of the same voice, talking to the same group of players over and over again. You know, much like I asked you about the personality of the players on the team, how much does the coach, not even so much the coach's belief, because like you said, everybody's got to be realistic, but the coach's personality or the way they handle themselves, how much does that impact the room when you're trying to do something like that?
Oh, it's a huge impact, and obviously the player's got to trust the coach that he knows what he's talking about too, right? Laviolette is obviously a smart, knowledgeable coach, and we trusted him, and we believed what he said. He said we're the better team, and we believe that. And being down 3-0 in that series was just a disappointment because we knew we were better than that. Then game 7, we're down 3-0 in the first 10 minutes of the game. He calls a timeout. He brings us all over, and he says, okay, here we are, down 3-0. Let's just get the next goal. If we get the next goal before the end of this first period, we give ourselves a chance. And what happened? We score, go into second period. I think we were down 3-1, and then boom, 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 boom. We score 4 straight and win 4-3.
So Joseph Woll is not really a known commodity yet, but you mentioned that you've watched the first 3 games of these series. So that means you've seen Joseph Woll in a big spot. What do you make of his game? He's being looked at again here for game 4. It's somewhat Hail Mary desperation, but if you know Joe Woll, it's kind of not, because we've been talking about Joe Woll before Ilya Samsonov even went out. What do you make of him as a prospect, as an NHL-ready goaltender, and I guess the confidence the Maple Leafs have shown in this kid?
Yeah, I have 3 kids, and I'm busy, so I haven't really sat down and watched 60 minutes of each game, but I have, flicked it on and watched here and there. But from what I see, he's just a calm, athletic kid, and he's done very well. His team obviously has confidence in him. And he just plays with confidence, which gives the players, a good feeling on the ice. And he's making the saves he needs to make. And obviously he came in last game, and it was a huge part and shutting the door. And so I think, they obviously they don't have – I don't know if Murray's healthy or not, but they don't have much choice, And obviously when you have a player like that, the players are going to rally around him, and he seems to do well in bigger games. So let's hope that that he comes up with a big one and just plays his game and gives him a chance to win. That's all he can do.
Goalie on the other side of things, goalie Bob, you know him, I believe, a teammate of yours in the 2010-2011 Flyers season there. One, are you any fun memories of him from your time together? And two, goalies, all players can be streaky to a certain extent. He is streakier than most. What do you think leads into a goalie being someone who kind of rides these hot or cold streaks either way?
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that gets hot and just rides with it. I was traded from Philadelphia to Columbus for Steve Mason, and I got to Columbus and they said, yeah, well, you'll get a chance to play. And from the trade deadline on, he started every game, and I wasn't even disappointed because he was phenomenal. He was the best goalie in the league, and it was unbelievable to watch. So he definitely gets in that rhythm and confident, and when he gets to that point, it's tough to beat him. So I think the Leafs just got to get on him, get in his face, and make it hard on him. And obviously traffic is something that is hard for any goalie. So get in those dirty areas, get traffic and tip and rebound goals, and they just got to make it hard for him. Can't make it an easy game for him.
So the confidence thing we've been talking about with the Leafs all season, like, do they run on confidence? Whose confidence is most important? What's the source of confidence? I mean, you guys look at each other in the room in 2010. I mean, you're looking across the room at Chris Pronger, Mike Richards. There's guys you can easily have confidence in. And I don't really know what that dynamic is inside the Maple Leafs room. We can only really guess. But I'll talk to your experience, or I'll let you talk to your experience. Like, when you're in goal, what are you looking for from your team that would give you confidence?
You play 82 games in a season, and you have that same routine and rhythm you're in and the way you're playing. And you just kind of look for that consistency from your team. You're going out playing your systems that the coach laid out for you, and just doing the right things and just keeping things simple. And sometimes when you're trying too hard, you mess up, and you're trying for those long passes or just trying to do too much, right? So I think when you see your players just doing their own jobs and working hard, blocking shots and desperation, and that gives you confidence, like, hey, I know everyone's bringing it tonight, and I'm going to do the same.
Last one for you, Michael. It's suspected that Ilya Samsonov was playing through injury before he was in fact injured in game 3 and forced to exit the game. Of course, Joseph Woll going in and now playing in game 4. How hard is it to play the position, to be a goaltender, when you are dealing with something?
It's hard. I definitely did that in my career where I had had things going on, and it's always in the back of your mind, especially in practice. You know, you might not practice as hard as you want to because of that. And then when you get in a game, you know, depending on the injury, sometimes you can just stay so focused on the puck and on the game and playing well. The injury, you know, goes away a little bit. But, you know, one little tweak gets right back in your head. So you're sometimes thinking about that, thinking about not re-injuring it or hurting it more in a game while you're playing, which is tough to deal with. So, you know, if it's just a little bruise on the knee or something that hurts all day and you get in a game, sometimes, like I said, that goes away. But when it's like a sore groin or something and it's just a certain movement, you stick your leg out and you feel that groin, it's right away, it's in your head, right? So anything that goes in your head besides stopping the puck is not good. You want to stay focused on the puck and playing your best hockey and not thinking about an injury for sure.
It was Michael Layton in 2010, and because Ilya Samsonov is injured, it'll have to be Joseph Woll in 2023. Michael, we appreciate your time this morning, and enjoy game four if it's on the schedule for you tonight.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good morning.
Say hi to Savvy for us.
I will, for sure. Take care.
That's Michael Layton, who came back out of a 3-0 hole in 2010 and is now currently the Windsor Spitfires goaltending coach.
Who is working under Mark Savard, Windsor Spitfires head coach.
Pretty impressive class there.
Not a bad group for some young guys to work under in Windsor there. Not bad at all.
So, proof that it can be done. One look at rosters, though.
Yep.
It's pretty important.
Ooh, there was one name I saw that jumped out, made me go, oh, well, that's a little different. I don't know which, if you had one.
No,
or
who's that? Who's that?
Oh, it's just the Chris Pronger. Does he jump out to you at all? Is that a guy who feels like it? If I was in a dressing room and I looked across the room and I had Chris Pronger on my team, just me personally, I feel 10 feet tall.
Well, when I asked him about confidence, I think he could have just said two words, Chris Pronger, right? And Chris Pronger authored maybe the greatest playoff performance, and I'm a little biased because I was definitely very, very much into it in 06, with Chris Pronger basically carrying the Edmonton Oilers to a cup final. Then the next year he wins a cup. Maybe Scott Niedermeyer is the guy winning the Conn Smythe, I believe, that year. But Chris Pronger has authored some of the great playoffs in the history of this game. And so that's one thing for the Flyers.
I'm going to sound 70 years old right now. If you weren't there, you can't understand what a beast. Honestly, you can't. There is no
unbelievable.
You always hear people talk about Lindros in this way of like, oh, it's just a physical force of which the game will never see. There is nobody doing it. They're like, we have special players in this game today. Makar, Heiskanen. You saw what Carlson was able to do. There is nobody that controls the game the way he did.
30 minutes of complete dominance single night.
And mushing Justin Bieber into the boards.
And then 4 years later, the LA Kings do it. And the Kings had already won a Stanley Cup, already had guys like Mike Richards, Drew Doughty, like Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, like guys who had full confidence in themselves and each other. It takes a certain makeup, you would think, in order to pull off what would be considered unthinkable, unimaginable, coming back and winning four straight games after falling behind 3-0. And if you compare this Leafs team and the heartbreak and demons and everything that goes with it to two teams in the Flyers and Kings in the last 15 years to accomplish this, there aren't many parallels to draw.
No. Although, quickly, I could picture Chris Pronger saying it'll be fun tomorrow. I don't think he'd say that well down 3-0 in a playoff series, but I could picture him thinking that because I do think that's just the little tongue-in-cheek nature. One thing that gave me a little bit of hope. William Nylander, is this team's Chris Pronger? What is happening?
Wouldn't it be fun to be Chris Pronger in his heyday? Like, just complete dominance.
Was it when he was a Duck that he was just stealing pucks at the end of... There was one cup final where he was just taking
pucks.
It was
the Ducks,
I'm going to take this. This
actually, no.
No, it was when he was a Flyer. It was that, you're right. It was the Flyer. Yeah, okay. Just an awesome jerk move. Love him for it.
But just like such a physical force and freak of nature.
Yeah.
That nothing could, it would be impossible to be nonplussed. Like, it would just be impossible to be rattled in any single way. And again, that came to the benefit of the Philadelphia Flyers
very much
in
so.
2010.
Big time.
So, someone's going to have to grow a few feet in order to recreate that magic. After the break, We will continue the discussion of Game 4 of the Eastern Conference semifinal with Mike Rupp, who won a Stanley Cup in 2003 and now serves as an NHL Network analyst. He's been hard on the Leafs previously.
He's had some thoughts.
So we'll see if he's got some thoughts on the Leafs, who are walking that death march. We'll do that after the break.